This is the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580 and on 90.9 FM HD2 and HD3 Urbana. You'll also find us online at will.illinois.edu. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. On the program today, our monthly look at computers. It's a show we call Computers and You. Peter Kimball is our guest. He is the Education Program Coordinator and Lead Faculty Trainer for the Fast 3 Consortium, Center for Teaching Excellence at the University of Illinois. So listeners, if you've got questions about computers, give us a call. Peter will help you out. You can join us with a telephone call. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, toll free, 800-222-9455. 800-222-WILL. Well, I'll say greetings, friend. How are you?
I'm just fine. It's a beautiful end of summer weekend coming up and just finished, so hard to believe we're near the end.
I know it is. September is fast approaching. Well, it's good to see you again. Thanks for coming in.
It's always a pleasure.
And we've got a listener who's ready to go and to talk with you. So let's go to this first caller on line one. Good afternoon.
Hi.
Hi.
I have a PowerBook G4, and it appears, and I can't be sure, but it appears that the hard drive is somehow not working. So in other words, I can't get it. I've replaced the battery, so I know it's not the battery and not the power source. I can get it to start going, and then it just goes around and around and never fully starts. So the question I have is it possible to replace the hard drive on a PowerBook G4? Is it worth it? Could it be something else? Is that enough of a question to start with?
Sure, that's enough. So it starts the boot up process and then just sort of spins.
That's right.
And doesn't go much further.
Spins.
That could well be a problem with the hard drive. Your PowerBook has a CD drive in it, I'm sure, or a DVD drive.
Yes.
If you have the Apple software CD, the installation CD, you can actually start from that CD, although it'll ask you, do you want to install or not? You'll actually be able to get the machine up. And if the computer comes up with the installation routine ready to go, which you don't necessarily want to accept and proceed with, that will pretty much tell you that the hard drive was at fault because the machine comes up fine when it tries to come up from the CD.
I don't think we got it was when we got these, there was a time when they didn't give you DVDs or CDs with it, you know.
Okay. Well, they're...
I mean, I've got two of them, and I don't think I've got a CD for either one.
Okay.
But I'll look.
The other thing that you could do is... certainly take it into an Apple store, and they would be able to do pretty much the same thing. As to whether it's worth replacing the hard drive, it's difficult in PowerBooks and in most of Apple's machines, the notebooks as well as a lot of the things like the iPhones and such, to even get in and make minor modifications like that. The hard drive could certainly be replaced, but perhaps not easily by end consumers. It might be something that would require being taken into one of the Apple stores.
And is it worth doing that?
Well,
I don't know if you know. You could answer that, but
yeah, I'm not sure. It's certainly going to be less expensive doing that than it would be to purchase a new PowerBook. But if you purchase a new PowerBook, you've got a lot more capabilities. So
right.
I think what you'll need to do is try to contact an Apple store because they're about the only ones who could. There are some other Apple-authorized service providers, but the Apple Store is probably the best route to go. And to ask, you could take the machine in. That's the nice thing about it being a PowerBook. They could ascertain by using a CD boot whether that was really the problem or not, because once they've done that, they can boot up into a diagnostic set of software and see if the hard drive is responding or not.
Do you know if the U of I has an Apple store that could do that?
The U of I doesn't, but I believe there is an Apple store
in Campus Town.
Yeah. Yes.
Campus Town.
And so let's see if we can find Apple store in Champaign.
Okay, I got this at the U of I.
Yeah, the official Apple store is Let's see, storeapple.com. There are a couple of other places that are listed here. So mostly what I just found when I did the search was the official online Apple Store, which is not what we want. But I believe there is indeed some place in town that would be able to handle that. You got this from the U of I?
Yes, but quite a few years ago.
Yes, and they may well not be able to fix it, but since you did get it from the U of I, you could also give them a call, give computer stores or
the
Micro Center a call and ask them where the where the recommended Apple Store would be. And there, I believe there is one, unless it's changed or moved, I believe I have seen it someplace in town. But
campus town. And they would have the...
Most of the actual Apple support stores do have the Apple Care, the support that and technicians on site that could assist you with that.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Yes. Good luck with it.
You're very welcome. This is the Afternoon Magazine. We're talking about computers this afternoon with Peter Kimball of the University of Illinois. Listeners, if you've got questions about computers, give us a call. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. 333-WILL, 800-222. WILL. Well, let me see if I can.
The Illini Apple Center at 512 East Green Street in Champaign.
Okay, very good.
For that caller. And there are several other places listed on the web that are not officially Apple Centers, but which may well be authorized Apple repair places. So there should be a number of options, and that would be his best bet.
Okay, very good. Well, we're going to have another caller come in here momentarily, perhaps. I don't know. Henry is talking with somebody on the phone in master control. Anyway, the number is again 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. Well, I've been seeing some ads, Peter, I guess they're phone providers, they're cell phone providers, service providers, and you can put a card into your laptop and you're ready to go in terms of being hooked up with the internet.
That's true. You're essentially using your cellular phone service to transmit data, and some of the companies, the various wireless providers, now have started rolling out, including in the Champaign-Urbana area, much faster connections so that it can rival a wired connection that somebody might have at their home. The advantage is that you can use it any place that you have a fairly strong cell signal, which in some areas works pretty well. The disadvantage is that it can get a little expensive if you use it a lot. Most of the cellular providers' plans that include unlimited data access can run well over $100 a month by the time you include the basic cell phone contract as well. And if you don't go by the unlimited amount of data transfer, then you have sometimes charges that can add up surprisingly by the end of the month. One provider I know, if you don't have a plan, charges $2 per megabyte of information uploaded or downloaded, and that could easily end up being $50, $60, $100, $200, $300 a month if you weren't careful. So, but it works out pretty well, and I know a couple of people who are in areas that are not served by either a cable modem or by the DSL line, so they didn't have the option other than dial-up, who opted to go with a cellular provider and a plug-in card for a laptop. And you can get the same sort of plug-in cards that you could use for a home machine as well, because you can have the same sort of slot available for a home machine. And they found that to be the most affordable way of having full internet access.
Yeah, interesting. I keep our fingers crossed that the cost will come down. That's pretty steep. Well, what do you say we take another call now? A listener on line two. Good afternoon.
Hi.
Hi.
This should be a really easy one. My son was staying with me and left the computer in that. I used to know how to do this. You'd go up to the top in Word, and you could go to 50%, and then you could see how your whole page looked. But then they upgraded Word, and I can't find that option. Where is it?
Okay, so we're talking about probably a Windows machine.
Yeah.
And it probably has the new version of Word 2007 on it.
I don't know. They upgrade. It was one of the automatic upgrades.
Well, this wouldn't have been an automatic upgrade, but this may well have been something that your son did to update it.
No, this is it. Anyway.
Up at the top, does it have?
It doesn't have that little box where I used to be able to.
Okay. Does it have a big round button in the top left corner? Kind of a big round Windows logo instead of the file menu and such?
Up in the top left corner of the
Microsoft.
I don't know. I'm not looking at it.
I was asking that simply because that would identify it if it were the new version
of
Microsoft.
Oh, it's definitely Word.
Well, but the big question is it Word 2003, the version that was...
Yes, it is. It is Word 2003.
Okay. Then you should be able to find that. Let's see if I can recall. It's been a while since I've had that in front of me. I would look in two places. One is in the lower right-hand corner. There should be some sort of a slider or some sort of, if not a slider, an option to type in the size of the document, and you can get it to fit. One of the options will be fit on screen, or maybe it will just say fit. And the other thing you could do, and because it is under a menu someplace, but again, I haven't used Word 2003 for a while, the other thing you can do is under... choose help, and under the help type, screen size or view on screen or words to that effect.
Okay, all right.
But I would first look in the lower right hand corner because there should be some control there, and you may just see it as a percentage. It may not be it may say 100% or 50%.
Yeah, I recognize that. It used to be at the top.
Well, just that should have a drop down, or else you can click and type into it, and one of the options should be fit. And fit simply means fit the entire page of the document into the available window space.
Okay, I'll give it a try. Thank you.
Good luck.
Bye.
Thanks for the call this afternoon. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. If you've got a question about computers and would like to talk to Peter Kimball, if you're outside the local dialing area, you can call us toll-free, 800-222-9455. Let's talk with another listener now, a caller on line one. Good afternoon.
Hi, I was calling about a G4 PowerBook that I think has... the battery melted to the computer. I was wondering if you know anything about battery recalls.
I know that Apple had recalled a number of batteries for various devices. I don't recall a specific one or what the details are. Let's see if we can find something about that. But if the battery actually failed, one of the things that Apple has done, no guarantee that they are still doing it, is they have extended the warranty for that. So again, I'm going to refer you to the Apple Store. So let's see if we say...
The battery, I can't actually take it out. I'm pretty sure it's melted.
Melted into place,
yeah.
Which is something that they would certainly... be able to recognize. And so let's see. They have the battery exchange program for the PowerBook G4, and it actually may have caused some other damage as well, so and that should also be covered. But if I just did a search, let's see, they've determined that certain batteries pose a safety risk, overheating. Clearly it overheated for you.
Yeah.
And they have on this website a whole series of information about what the battery is, which you may not be able to deal with. You'll be asked for the serial number of the battery, if you can get it out. And if you can't get it out and find the serial number, if it's not available, then you could simply take it to one of the Apple stores and they would be able to deal with it.
You know if I can take that to any Apple store?
You should be able to take it to any official Apple store, not necessarily every place that sells apples, but there are some actual Apple stores. I found this. It was the first item that I found on a Google search for PowerBook battery recall.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And you'll find it there, and they specifically mention the PowerBook G4. In my glance at the article, I didn't see any expiration dates. And I would be surprised if they had one, because if the battery fails and it's a safety hazard, clearly they're going to want to replace them whenever you let them know that happened.
Okay, thank you very much.
Uh-huh.
You're welcome. Next, we take a call from a listener on line two. Good afternoon. Line Hello. Two, hi there.
Hello.
Hi.
Hey, I've got a question about internet providers. I am on dial-up currently.
Okay.
DSL's not available to me.
All right.
And I can get a wireless service, or I can get a satellite service. And I just wonder, they're about comparable in price, and I just wondering which would be the better way to go.
So you are out in the country, I bet, I would gather, or at least not in a major town. So cable modems are also, I presume, not an option.
Right.
Okay.
Right. I don't have cable service.
Okay. Well, that pretty much eliminates that. In general, it depends, of course, on the wireless provider. The general comparison has been that wireless, especially if it's two-way wireless, a lot of the satellite providers also require when you're online that you be using a phone line and be dialed in so that the information comes to you, downloads to you from the satellite, but the information, which is a lot less generally that you're sending, like when you're typing or clicking on links and sending that information in. Much of that on these for satellite providers, except for the very high end, is simply done by a telephone connection. The overall effect is much faster speed because you're getting the information, the much more massive amounts of information being sent to you at the higher speed directly from the satellite.
Well, I had a friend that I talked to that has Sky Blue, the satellite service, and he says his pages don't load a bit faster than they did on dial-up.
Well, that's...
Data transfers faster, but he said the pages don't load a bit faster.
Well, there are probably a number of factors going on in there. In general, depending upon the level of service, and you can look at both the wireless and the satellite providers, and they will list you various costs for various speeds. And usually the answer is, I can't say it's always this case, but usually if you have access to a local wireless provider, that will tend to be faster speed for less money. So that would be the direction I would first look. Satellite is certainly viable for those who are out not only outside the range of DSL and cable modems, but outside the range of the various wireless service providers as well, because you can still be far enough out that none of those will work. You're always within range of a satellite service.
That's true.
So I would go with the closer first, and generally the advice is, or the findings are, that it tends to be for a given level of speed noticeably less expensive.
And it would be less susceptible to weather interruptions.
That's certainly, well, that's probably true. It's not immune to weather interruptions because it is still wireless, but, you know, if there's a giant hailstorm and thunderstorm and tornadoes and such, you're not going to be using your computer anyway.
Yeah.
We hope.
Okay.
But satellite definitely can have, as you know, if you've got satellite television reception, is definitely at times more susceptible to weather conditions. And sunspots.
Telephone reception, or satellite TV reception.
Sure.
A little rain will drop it out.
Yeah. So you could find, it's running at different frequencies, I think, for the internet access, but the principles are the same. There's a lot more distance between you and that satellite, and the signal is a lot weaker, which
That's
is why
true.
You need the larger dish.
That's true. Okay, well, that's kind of what I was wondering. I thought I'd get an expert opinion on it.
Well, I would look at the local wireless first.
Okay. Okie dokie.
Okay, good luck with it.
Thank you.
This is the Afternoon Magazine. We're talking today about computers. Our guest is Peter Kimball of the University of Illinois. Let's take another call. A listener in on line one, probably in the Champaign-Urbana area. Good afternoon.
Hi.
Hi.
Hello.
I'm a new user of Outlook just a couple of weeks, and I haven't been able to get the search function to work. And I've gone through their help things and done every single thing they've suggested, and it still won't work. I'm trying to figure out what I'm doing wrong.
So this is searching for specific text or messages or something in your inbox or elsewhere? Oh, I'm not going to be able to give you a specific answer to that. I am among the relatively minority of people on campus who do not yet use Outlook. I use other email clients.
Yes, I'm missing Eudora already.
Yes, well, I'm still using Eudora.
Yeah.
It's showing its age. That was actually developed by somebody who came from the U of I, incidentally, Eudora
mm-hmm.
was. But as far as the search, I have not got a real good solution if you've examined the various help pages. So what happens, you're looking, for example, for a particular phrase or a particular address, and you type
it in. Or name or anything.
Anything.
If I'm looking at it right there, just to test out the system, it just says no matches found.
Okay, well, the one thing to check, as you probably have, there is no doubt a field or a part of the search information that specifies where to look.
Yeah.
You might want to click, and if there's an advanced button for advanced search, you might want to check and make sure that it's not looking only in specific mailboxes or in specific areas where it's not finding anything.
Yeah, it's all mail.
Okay, so that should actually find it, and I'm afraid I don't have any other suggestions.
Okay.
Simply because I don't use the program and I don't have a copy of it available on this machine.
Okay.
What you could do is you could go to the Microsoft website, Microsoft.com/Outlook,
uh-huh.
and in that area there are, you might have to look around for it a little bit, but there are some support areas, including some forums, which are essentially community bulletin boards,
uh-huh.
and you could type a question there and get a response. You could also do a Google search for Outlook 2003 or 2007, whichever you've got.
Uh-huh.
Search doesn't work, and see if other people have posted similar problems. There's a good chance that some of them might have, and see what their solutions were.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right, thank you.
Uh-huh.
Okay, you're very welcome. This is the Afternoon Magazine. Computers our topic this afternoon. Peter Kimball, our guest. No one waiting at the moment. If you'd like to give us a call, 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area, and toll-free 800-222-9455. The caller before this last one, the two of you talked a little bit about weather, and just really quickly, maybe you could tell us review for us surge protection.
Surge protection, which everybody should have on any of their electronics these days. That doesn't just include your computer, but your expensive television set and anything else, is a way of helping prevent damage caused by what are called power surges. But essentially, the current that comes in that you plug your devices into, the regular house current, is not as smooth and as consistent as most people assume. There are all sorts of little millionth of a second little bumps and spikes in it. And so a up-to-date surge protector should be installed on every critical bit of electronic equipment, and that includes anything that you wouldn't want to go out and pay for. None of them are going to protect you from a direct lightning strike. If the lightning has just come through 5 miles of clear atmosphere, it's going to make it through a few inches of plastic just fine. But if the lightning strike happens to be down the road a little bit, or if it hits the neighbor's house and that causes a surge to go through the power lines, that could well protect you. But there are even other sorts of problems, little glitches. If a power substation goes out at some point, there could be a sudden little surge. And most of those will probably be filtered out by the power supply of the computer and such. But it just is going to be far safer to have a surge protector. The step above that would be a small uninterruptible power supply, which essentially runs on batteries when the power goes out, but all the time is filtering the current coming in. And those will give you, in the cases of the little blinking of the lights, your computer will still stay up and running, so you won't lose documents.
Okay.
Those are more expensive. Those UPS or uninterruptible power supplies are a bit more expensive. The cheap ones are closer to $100, and you can get a fairly decent surge protector for $25 or $30. You get a not very good surge protector for $5 or $10. And
okay.
So I probably wouldn't bother getting one of those.
All right. Let's take another call now. A listener on line 4. Good afternoon. Where are you calling from today?
Hello.
Hi.
I have two questions. The first one is I have a computer that was on loan, and with permission of the loaner, I put my tax information, a tax program on there. Last year, and it resides on there right now. I will be returning the computer, and I'd like to know if just an uninstall will keep my information protected.
No, not completely. Generally, when you uninstall the software, it will uninstall itself, but because you might want to use the data at some time, the actual tax data probably will remain. That would allow you to uninstall the software, install new software, and not have to enter all the previous tax information. If you start up the tax software and it asks you, depending on whether it's TurboTax or the other ones, the software stores that tax information, your various tax, like your 2007 1040 form and whatnot, in a set of files. And that tax software will tell you where it is. You can actually say when it comes up, it says, is this the file that you want to use? And you can say, no, I want to use something else. And you can then glean where that's being stored. And that's what you actually need to manually delete. That would not be deleted by uninstalling the software.
Okay. Thank you. And my second question is, I will be recycling an old computer that, of course, has personal information on it. Is the best thing for me to do is to take that hard drive out before I give it up?
Well, that would certainly be effective at making sure no information gets out there, but you could also thoroughly erase the hard drive. There are a number of free and shareware utilities that essentially load a small program onto diskette or onto CD. It's a little more difficult if you don't have a diskette drive, but I'm guessing if it's an older machine, it probably does have a diskette drive. Then you start the machine up from that diskette drive because you can't start it from the main hard drive and tell it that you would like to scrub or remove everything from the hard drive. And it essentially doesn't just erase it, because just erasing a hard drive actually leaves the data in place. It just marks the spaces available for reuse. A lot of these unerase utilities will actually write patterns of zeros and ones over the top of the existing data, making it either very difficult or impossible to ever recover. Difficult if it's only it writes ones and zeros over at once. Impossible if it does it two or three times, as many of them will do. And so that's the other option of not having to take the hard drive out.
Okay.
But taking the hard drive out would certainly be effective. Then, of course, you've got the hard drive, and you have to figure out what you're going to do with it.
Right. Okay, well, thanks a lot.
Uh-huh.
You're welcome. Next, we go to a listener on line one. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. I've been using some voice recognition software recently, in particular Jot, which allows you to place calls from your phone and send emails or post to your blog. And I've found I enjoy doing that more than I expected. So I've been looking at voice recognition software like Naturally Speaking, Dragon.
Yes, that's a well-known brand.
And also now I know that Vista has voice recognition software built in. And I can't quite decide if I should get Vista, which I'm kind of reluctant to do, or buy the Naturally Speaking program. And I'm not sure how those work in terms of, are you able to speak and have that those words appear in the programs of your choice, or do you have to go into a specific program and then cut and paste it or something?
I suspect, I don't have a lot of direct experience with that, but I suspect that with most of these products, you have a choice. In terms of whether you go with the voice recognition that's built into Vista, which is no doubt from some company. I'm not sure which company. They've actually included a version of that in there, in Vista. But that would probably be effective for your needs. The question as to whether install Vista or not depends upon if this is coming on a new machine. You're almost certainly going to be using Vista if it's a Windows machine. If it's an older machine, you want to make sure that it has the horsepower to run Vista, enough memory and enough processor speed so that you won't be dismayed by the increased demands that the Vista operating system puts on the computer. Not much good to get the new voice recognition capabilities of Vista if the entire machine slows down to where you find it uncomfortable.
Well, I think my machine would run Vista. I just worry about it conflicting with programs that I already have and just the learning curve, I guess.
Well, there's certainly a bit of that. There is from Microsoft, if you're concerned about existing programs, a program, if you go to the windows.com/Vista and hunt around a little bit, there is a program that will check your system's readiness for Vista. It not only looks at hardware, but it looks at the software you have installed for known incompatibilities, mostly with older software. So you'd be able to, if there's any particular software you're concerned about, you'd be able to check on that. I would suggest that what you do in terms of Dragon, naturally speaking, or some of the other things that are available, is do a search for voice recognition software reviews and see what you find there. And there will be a number of them. Some of them I'm looking at come from CBS News. I didn't know they did these sorts of things, but there's some reviews of voice recognition software. PC Magazine has a number of reviews and price comparisons. And there's I'm seeing a dozen or more different sites, many of which are non-commercial. You want to be careful about the ones that are, you know, this is
right.
a commercial site and we're reviewing our software and amazing, it turns out to be the best.
Right.
That's what I would do, and that should give you more than adequate information to make your decision.
All right. I'm surprised. I didn't think I would be interested in such a thing, but I found that Jot works really remarkably well, and I'm able to just make a phone call and send emails in doing so.
Yeah, I know a number of people who have really become enamored of that and find that it's much more effective.
Yeah.
It doesn't work too well in an office with other people around. But and we'll hope that not much of that starts being done when they enable internet access on domestic airline flights, which is coming fairly soon. In fact, I think they're intentionally filtering out a lot of that voice over internet stuff.
Well, thank you very much.
Uh-huh.
Next, we take a call from a listener on line two. Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm interested in working on church archives and wanting to have some relatively easy available storing and retrieving of records electronically. And I'm wondering if you're aware of any program software or online storage options.
So the archive information that you're looking at saving is documents and such, or?
That's right. Uh-huh. It's documents, and it's all on hard copy.
Okay. So you're going to be scanning that or doing something with it and then storing those scanned versions.
Yeah, I'll either have to scan it or make an index.
Uh-huh. And then just refer to have the index refer to your offline physical storage someplace.
That's right.
There are a number of programs that could do that in general. Almost any simple, even a simple database program, including some that you may already have, can certainly be used to store the index and descriptions and such. If you actually scan all of this, which would be probably a major project and would take a fairly large amount of space, there are a number of online sources, including some that are under the umbrella of Google for storing information so that you would have it. The advantage of this online storage is that you have it any place available to you, any place you've got web access. The disadvantage is that you want to make sure that the service that you choose for online service is one that's going to be around for a while. There were some, one that just went out of business a few months ago that caused a bit of problem for the people who had information stored with them. They were a much smaller company. So I think either one of those would work for you.
What about search functions? Are any of them, you mentioned Google, or a particular database program that would have an easy search program to retrieve?
Well, the problem with searching, if you want to search by whatever the content is, then just scanning them in is not going to be adequate. You're going to, because that would simply give you an image. You will need to make sure that there is some sort of character recognition that actually can turn into what would essentially be an editable document. It's something called OCR for optical character recognition. Comes with many scanning software packages, but essentially it looks at it, and unless it's really a poor quality document to start with in terms of the contrast or in terms of its wear and tear, or uses a very unusual font, most of those software packages do a pretty decent job of recognizing the words and storing them as a essentially like a micro, like a word process document. Then you could certainly search on the content. If you don't do that, it just has a number of images basically, and it has no idea what's in the document. It just knows the name of the document if you've given it a name, and you could add certain keywords to it. So the question is whether you want to search by keywords that you enter yourself or by the original content. Mm-hmm. If you want to search by original content, you need to do more than just scan. You need to convert then into text.
Right. Well, hey, that's a big help. I thank you very much.
You're quite welcome.
Next, we go to a listener on line 3. Hello.
Yes, I have a MacBook Pro, and I was looking for a PDA of some form, and the thought occurred to me I may get an iPod Touch. I was curious of a couple things. The first is how well or what type of interface the Touch would use to communicate with my MacBook, like whether is it Bluetooth or something along those lines. And the other is how well or is it even a possibility? I have a friend who has an iPhone, and he's got a connection with the cloud, he was telling me.
Uh-huh.
Is that a possibility to do with an iPod Touch?
Well, I'm just looking at the iPod Touch. It can certainly deal with the Internet, which means that you'll be able to connect via wireless connection.
Sure.
If it has another sort of connection, such as a USB port or something of that sort, I'm just looking to see if I can find that specific.
I didn't know if there is a Bluetooth.
Well, it might well have Bluetooth, but Bluetooth would not necessarily be the best way to download very much data because it's designed as a relatively low-speed format, for connecting to things like headphones and such. And so I'm just looking to see if I can find the information about the iPod Touch, and I'm not finding that directly. And I'm looking for you'd think they'd have specifications here. Mm. The Internet in your pocket. It talks about connecting via Wi-Fi, but I'm not sure, and I'm not finding right in the moment of time that I've got here, whether it's got another sort of connection. Ideally, because it'll be faster, if it'll have either a USB connection or a so-called FireWire connection and a cable, an optional cable perhaps that you could plug in, that would allow you to much more easily synchronize it and therefore transfer other information. My guess that it does, but I'm just not finding it right at this moment. But if
sure.
you go to the Apple.com for iPod Touch and hunt around a little bit more than I have done, you should be able to find what those capabilities
are. Maybe also iPod Touch product review.
Yeah, that might also help.
Okay.
I was looking at the official Apple site.
Have you heard anything about people having issues networking their either iPhones or iPods with their computers via through a wireless network?
There have been some issues with wireless access with the iPhones. Apple resolved some of those with a very recent software update for the iPhone, not just the 2.0, but the 2.02 or something affixed to the big update that came around earlier this summer.
Okay.
There are always going to be some issues, but I've heard of nothing specific other than what one hopes the Apple's release of the new iPhone update software package
resolves. They basically do what Apple should do, and that's work, right?
Yeah. Well, yes, although there are some people who have been a bit dismayed that it hasn't worked quite as well out of the box with the iPhone wireless access, internet access, as they had expected. The bar is set much higher for Apple.
Through the G3 or through the Wi-Fi?
Through the 3G, yeah.
Oh, it's 3G, yeah. Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much.
Uh-huh.
You're welcome. We have about 5 minutes left in this portion of the program. If you've got a question about computers, give us a call. Talk to Peter. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. Well, we haven't talked about, I don't think we've talked about thinking of little tiny devices, the mini laptops. What's the word on those?
Well, there's a continuous evolution that's going on. In the early days, cell phones started to have a little bit of web access, but you had just this tiny little screen. Then you end up with the more recent generation of devices, such as, well, most notably probably Apple's iPhone, but a number of other providers are now having touch screen, full internet access on fairly nice screens. But no matter what you do and no matter how effective the interface, so you can zoom in and pinch the screen and zoom out and move around, there's a limited amount that you can do on that smallest screen. And so some of the mini laptops that are coming out that may have screens much smaller than standard computers did even 5 or 10 years ago, but they're much larger than screens that are available on other current devices. And there's going to be more and more of that as people want greater access. The problem is you draw the line between what you can put in your pocket and what you have to carry along in some sort of a case. The iPhone and the Dare from LG with Verizon and various other such phones fit in a pocket. I mean, they're telephones and they've got internet access. The mini notebooks or sometimes even micro notebooks don't do that, but you do have a larger screen and you'll generally have a slightly easier to use keyboard. I know you can switch into the standard keyboards, the QWERTY so-called full typable cape keyboards on things like the iPhone and some of the other devices, but the keys are really still pretty small.
Yeah. Any suggestions for what folks might want to consider if they're interested in a mini?
You know, I haven't looked at that yet because I have not really been in the market for such.
Yeah.
I've just found it not, I know, I'm not as connected perhaps as I should be. There are those who are connected from the time they wake up in the morning and they send out a little little alert saying, hey, I'm up now, so you can talk to me a little on the Twitter website. And the my need for internet access has been a little bit less.
Yeah, I'm not a wired Willie.
I tend to resist it somewhat. I was one of the last adopters of cell phones, I think, although it's now been a number of years.
I have an antique cell phone. It was cutting edge when I purchased it, but now it's...
On the other hand, students these days, especially, and I can speak from firsthand experience with this, cell phones that have the small screens that it will act as a navigator, so you don't need the GPS system. Mm-hmm. They have the full... I have someone who needs to get notice of upcoming music performance potential jobs fairly quickly, so his Gmail account automatically sends, if it comes from any of the people who may supply information, contact information, it automatically sends it over to his cell phone provider, and his cell phone receives the email. In general, he'll be aware of it within 2 minutes of the time it's sent and responds from wherever he happens to be.
Wow.
Which is fairly handy, but I have not yet found. I kind of enjoy my time away from the net, to tell you the truth.
Well, that's refreshing.
But it's there if people need it, and I think the success of these notebooks is going to be somewhat limited because the whole key is that it be portable, and if you can't really put it in your pocket, it's going to be something else you have to remember to bring along with you.
Yeah, okay. Well, there we'll leave it for this month. This is the Afternoon Magazine, and Computers and You is a topic we take up once a month. Next month, are we going to do it? Do you know when we're going to do it?
Well, it's going to be – I don't know that decision has been made directly. Stay tuned. Definitely in September, probably.
Okay. Maybe. Peter Kimball has been our guest this afternoon in this portion of the program. He is the Education Program Coordinator and Lead Faculty Trainer for the FAST-3 Consortium, Center for Teaching Excellence at the University of Illinois. Peter, thanks again.
It's always a pleasure.